Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Transportation of Property and Preemption Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On May 13, 2013, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Dan City Used Cars v. Pelkey. The question in this case was whether claims filed under state law regarding the storage and sale of a towed vehicle were preempted by the Federal Aviation Administration Authorization Act of 1994. Or the FAAAA, which supersedes state laws, related to a price, route, or service of any motor carrier with respect to the transportation of property. In an opinion delivered by Justice Ginsburg, the court held unanimously that state law claims stemming from the storage and disposal of a car, once towing has ended, are not sufficiently connected to a motor carrier service with respect to the transportation of property to warrant preemption under Section 14501(c)(1) of the FAAAA. The judgment of the New Hampshire Supreme Court was therefore affirmed. To discuss the case, we have Greg Dickinson, who is an associate at Harris Beach, LLP. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Dickinson.
Today I'll be discussing Dan City Used Cars v. Pelkey. In Dan City v. Pelkey, the court held that the Federal Aviation Administration Authorization Act of 1994, the FAAAA, did not preempt the plaintiff's negligence in state Consumer Protection Act claims against a towing company that towed and sold his vehicle without authorization. The plaintiff, Robert Pelkey, lived in an apartment complex in New Hampshire, and like many in the area, his apartment required that if there was a snowstorm, he remove his car so that they could plow the lot. After one February storm, when Pelkey's Honda Civic remained in the lot, his landlord called Dan City Used Cars to have the car towed so that it could clear the lot. This was, unfortunately, just the beginning of a long series of terrible misfortune for the plaintiff. At the time of the towing, he was confined to his bed with a serious medical condition, and he wasn't even aware that the car had been towed. And then soon after, he was admitted to the hospital for surgery to amputate his left foot. Finally, to top it off, during the surgery, he suffered a heart attack, which required an extended stay in the hospital. He ended up in the hospital from February until early April. All the while, though, unaware of Pelkey's situation, the towing service began arrangements to auction off his car because he never reclaimed it. It wasn't until the last minute, actually just 2 days before the auction, that Pelkey finally learned what had happened to his car and of the company's plans to sell it. At this point, he tried to offer to reclaim his vehicle from the towing company, but for reasons that aren't entirely clear, the towing company nonetheless decided to sell the car to a third party, did never notify Pelkey or give him any proceeds from the sale. Pelkey brought two claims against the towing service in New Hampshire State Court. First, he brought a common law negligence claim, alleging that the company had failed to use reasonable care when it disposed of his vehicle. And second, he claimed that the company had violated the New Hampshire Consumer Protection Act. This act governs the disposal of abandoned vehicles and requires that companies follow certain procedures. He argued that the company had improperly certified to the state that the car was worth less than $500 and that it had wrongly proceeded with the auction even after Pelkey had attempted to reclaim his car. In response, Dan City argued that both of these claims were preempted by the Federal Aviation Administration Authorization Act. Now, you wouldn't be alone if it strikes you as a little bit strange that an act with aviation in its title could preempt a claim related to towing and selling a car. So a little background is helpful here. In the late 1970s, Congress passed the Airline Deregulation Act. This act rolled back the restrictive regulation of the airline industry in favor of a scheme based on market competition. But to prevent the states from undoing Congress's deregulation effort by introducing their own state regulations, Congress included with the act a broad preemption provision that preempts any state law related to the price, route, or service of an air carrier. Then, many years later, in 1994, Congress actually did the same thing with the trucking industry. Worried that state regulation of transportation between the states had become overly burdensome, Congress targeted state trucking regulations also for preemption. It passed the FAAAA, which preempted any state law related to the price, route, or service of any motor carrier. The act also added the qualifier that to be preempted, the state law must relate to the price, route, or service with respect to the transportation of property. Given the breadth of this preemption clause, covering any state law related to the price, route, or service of a motor carrier, lower courts have struggled to place really any limits on its reach. As Justice Scalia has observed in the ERISA context, everything is related to everything else, at least at some level. Given the Act's broad language, some lower courts have found preemption in pretty surprising places. In addition to preempting core economic regulations, like limits on carriers' prices, some courts have found the Act to preempt state laws governing things like the wages of truck drivers and even bribery and racketeering claims. The rationale being that wage and hour and bribery laws have at least some effect on motor carrier prices, even if it's pretty indirect. Here, the defendant towing service, Dan City, argued that the plaintiff's claims were related to its services as a motor carrier with respect to the transportation of property because the company had towed the car, stored it, and expected to be paid for doing this. The plaintiff argued in response that his claims fell outside the preemption clause because the conduct complained of wasn't the towing service's transportation of the vehicle, but its sale of the vehicle after the transportation was over. Given the difficulty that lower courts have had limiting the reach of the Act and the court's very apparent skepticism of the preemption argument during oral argument, court watchers pretty widely predicted that the court would use this case to limit the Act's preemptive scope. The real question was how the court would do it, whether it would issue a broad rule implicating a lot of cases or a more narrow decision. The court began its analysis in the case with a comparison to its ERISA cases, which deal with a pretty similar preemption clause. ERISA preempts any state law related to an employee benefit plan. The court noted that although such clauses should be interpreted broadly because of their broad language, the words related to can't be read literally, or else preemption wouldn't have any limits at all. To limit the Act's scope, in this case, the court focused on one phrase in particular. The court emphasized that by its terms, the clause applied only to state laws governing motor carriers with respect to the transportation of property, the property here being Pelkey's car. The court agreed with Dan City that the plaintiff's claims implicated the company's handling of property that was transported, but the court noted that the claims related to the behavior only once the transportation had already ended. Pelkey's claim, recall, was based on the towing company having auctioned his car even after he had notified them of his desire to reclaim it. The court held that because the conduct governed by New Hampshire law occurred after the car's transportation was over, the Act didn't preempt his claim. Now, to most who were watching this case closely, the result wasn't all that surprising. Most people expected a decision against preemption. But the way the court ultimately decided to limit the preemption is significant. At oral argument, the justices had tossed around at least a few other ways that they might consider limiting preemption. Justice Scalia had referenced language from his dissent in a prior case where he had suggested that the Act's scope be limited to state laws that explicitly target the transportation industry. Under this approach, the state law claims would have been spared because they applied to any disposition of a vehicle, not targeting the transportation industry in particular. Justice Breyer, too, offered another possibility at oral argument. He suggested limiting the Act's scope by focusing on the deregulatory purpose that Congress had in mind when they passed the Act. Under that approach, the New Hampshire regulations would have been spared because they didn't relate to the where, why, and how of property transportation, which were really the targets of Congress's deregulation. Instead, the state laws related only to the disposition of property once it had already been transported. By ultimately adopting neither of these approaches, the court was able to ground its decision in the text of the Act, and this avoided any announcement of a new grand preemption principle in this area, which is probably really a good thing. The decision has just enough breadth to cover this case and others that would severely stretch the Act's reach, but it avoids the unpredictable policy-based reasoning that regulated parties find so unsavory. Still, the decision will have effects on the transportation industry, because going forward, a motor carrier would need to show how a state law relates to transportation of property. Defendants will have a much harder time relying on the Act for protection from state laws that affect their transportation businesses, but not the transportation itself. Asking whether compliance with state and federal law is impossible at least sounds like a pretty bright-line rule, much more so at least than asking whether state law is an obstacle to federal objectives. The one thing that is clear from these cases, though, is that if you want to argue preemption in the Supreme Court, you're going to need to find a way to convince Justice Thomas that compliance is impossible, not just an obstacle to federal policy.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org /multimedia.